Listening Library presents March Toward the Thunder by Joseph Bruschak. Read for you by Victor Bavine.
Author's note. This novel is deeply rooted in fact. The events it describes in the Civil War, the weaponry, the military terms, the language used by the characters, the food they eat, even the songs they sing are all real and the result of many years of research on my part. Although the protagonist and his closest companions are fictional, all of the other characters and events are from the historical record. Plus, though I chose to call my main character by a different name, Louis Nolet is based on my own great-grandfather, an Abenaki Indian from Canada who did serve in the Irish Brigade in 1864. Like many Americans, I've always felt a close connection to this war. When I was a child, my family drove south each summer to spend time with my great-uncle, my grandmother's brother, Orvis Dunham. A northerner, he had chosen to live in Virginia, where he managed the Warm Springs Hotel. Our stops along the way always included Gettysburg, Pennsylvania, where we would tour the battlefield, and Washington, D.C., where we visited museums and historical sites. We always knew when we crossed the Mason-Dixon line, for it was a segregated South that we entered back then. The gas stations had separate drinking fountains for white and colored. My grandfather, Jesse Bowman, whose own Indian skin was the darkest in our family, only made that trip with us once, after being told by a gas station attendant that he could not use the restroom with the sign "Whites Only" on its door. In Virginia, great-uncle Orvis took us on more battlefield tours, reliving stories he'd learned from men who'd survived those grim struggles. He also took us to visit African-American friends who'd been his employees at the big hotel, bringing them food or presents for their children. Their shacks were a sad contrast to the homes of white Virginians. If the war had really been fought to free the slaves, I remember thinking back then why were things still this way in Virginia? Although it all happened long before I was born, the American Civil War was never just a distant memory to me. My grandfather, Jesse Bowman's own father, Louis Bowman, was a Civil War veteran. But I knew little about it. Grandpa Jesse told me that his father would never say anything about his experience in the war. It was better not told. But the memories of it were always with him, for he'd been gravely wounded and left for dead on the battlefield. "When I told him I'd enlisted for World War I," my grandfather told me, "my father broke down and cried." I knew that my great-grandfather had served in a New York regiment, but I didn't know that much about the details of his service until my sister Margaret, our family's best historian and most dogged researcher, came to my aid as she always does. You'll find Marge credited in the author's notes of many of my historical novels. Among other things, she managed to get the pension records from the National Archives of our great-grandfather, listed not as Louis, but Louis Bowman. Despite the discrepancy in the first name, there was no doubt from the details that it was he. Soldier Certificate Number 208738, Louis Bowman. 5'8.5", dark complexion, dark hair, black eyes. Born in Canada. Farmer and laborer. Resident of Porter's Corners. Town of Greenfield, Saratoga. Recruited by Captain Forsyth at East Troy, New York. Private, Company E, 69th New York Infantry. Commander Peter W. Sweeney. Medical discharge August 14, 1865, at Stanton General Hospital, Washington, D.C. My great-grandfather was Canadian, but a Canadian of native descent whose ancestral roots were in what became the United States. Records list his birthplace as St. Francis, the name then used for the Abenaki Indian Reserve of Odonok, a mission village made up largely of refugee Indians from New England who fled north to escape the English during the 18th century. I've written about the 18th century experience of Odinak Abenakis in two of my earlier novels, Arrow Over the Door and The Winter People. Like numerous other young Canadian Indian men, my great-grandfather came south to find work because little was available around the reserve. And in 1864, it was in the United States that a recruiter for the Irish Brigade found him. The Irish Brigade. During the Civil War, it is estimated that more than 150,000 Irishmen fought for the Union. There was also an entire Southern Brigade of Irishmen that fought on the side of the Confederacy. Why was this so? The answers can be found in recent Irish history. Despite centuries of struggle against British rule, throughout the 19th century, Ireland was still a colonial possession of England. Although Irish men and women had already been coming to the United States for many years in large numbers, the greatest influx of Irish immigrants occurred in 1846 as a result of a blight that destroyed the Irish potato crop in 1845. In one of the greatest disasters in history, the population of Ireland dropped from about 8.5 million to 6.5 million. Many starved, but an estimated 1,600,000 Irish men and women came to the United States. These new immigrants were generally not welcomed. They were Catholic in what was then a largely Protestant nation. They were competing for scarce jobs in a struggling economy. Many refused to hire anyone with an Irish name. Signs reading "No Irish Need Apply" began to appear in American cities. In 1851, well before the Civil War, the Irish citizens of New York City formed a volunteer militia that was accepted as part of the New York State Militia as the 69th Regiment. After the attack on Fort Sumter, the 69th, led by Colonel Michael Corcoran, fought at the First Battle of Bull Run, serving as the rear guard during the Union retreat. Two more New York regiments that were mostly Irish, the 63rd New York and the 88th New York, and two other regiments, the 28th Massachusetts and the 116th Pennsylvania, were added to the 69th to form the Irish Brigade. With a lack of opportunity for other jobs, the example of prominent Irish Americans, the generous cash bonuses being offered to recruits, it's not surprising that many Irish jumped at the chance to enlist. Moreover, by the mid-19th century, the Irish already had a long and honorable history of military service, having signed on as mercenary soldiers in wars all over the European continent. Becoming a soldier was a familiar path for a young Irishman with no other road to take. Although the cash bonuses offered for volunteering were attractive, their motives were not just monetary. Some saw it as a way to gain military experience that they might use when the American Civil War was won, in a later battle to free their own homeland from British rule. There is no doubt, too, that after years of struggle against English despotism that made the proud Irish people feel like slaves, many identified with the Union cause. A recruiting advertisement that appeared in the Boston Herald on July 30, 1862, begins with these words, which appeal to that Irish pride and patriotism. "Shall villains drag our starry flag by the blood of warriors consecrated, and raise instead the viper's head or northern freemen subjugated? No, no, the boasts of southern hosts by heaven right soon will make them swallow. They'll shortly feel our Yankee steel, backed by an Irish Fach O'Ballach." Fach O'Ballach is a Gaelic phrase which means "clear the way." It became the battle cry of the largely Irish regiments that became known as the Irish Brigade, men who combined the pride of being Irish with their desire to fight for freedom. In large part, the men of the Irish Brigade lived up to that motto. They were usually the first into battle where the fighting was the worst. By the end of the war, no other brigade had been more praised for gallantry, dash, and discipline. They also suffered the third highest casualty rate in the Union Army. Of the 7,715 men who served in its rank.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?